the Democrats have released their budget. What's in and what's out? How does it compare with Governor Youngkin's initial budget? Also, the efforts to depoliticize Virginia's top election office hits a snag in the Senate, though there's consensus in the House. And yes, hardball in the House. The GOP finds itself apologizing for a tweet attacking the House Speaker's pass. It's Stay the Water. I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille, and you're joining us for the 2024 General Assembly Week in Review. Welcome back. I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille, and you're joining us here on State of the Water, where we bring movers, shakers, and policymakers to you to talk about things important to you and the community. You know, we hope that you had a phenomenal weekend. I know in some parts of the country, California, here in Hampton Roads, it's a little wet, but also the weather's kind of crazy as well. And we hope that you're staying healthy because we know that there's different bugs going around. Whatever you do, make sure you take care of your health and take care of those things and those people that are important to you, because you only get one go round on this earth. So make it your best. Not only that, but as always, we're broadcasting from the campus of the Norfolk State University, home of the Spartan Nation, here in WNSB Hot 91, the soul of VA. And we'd like to thank all of you for joining us, our supporters, our listeners, as you always do on every Sunday. Without you, we couldn't do what we do. So you're joining us now for our week in review. You know, what's going on Capitol Hill? You know, it's been a phenomenal General Assembly session so far. As a matter of fact, we're 1 week past what's called crossover and also the budget being released. You know, we talked about this in the last show, Budget Sunday. And we were anxiously awaiting to find out what's happening in the budget and what's going to be released. And we started to dissect those things. And in Virginia, the governor releases his proposed budget usually right before the end of the year. So Governor Youngkin released his budget around the middle of December of 2023. And in that, he outlined his priorities. So that budget, now it was in the House and the Senate, and then they debated those particular budget items along with other budget amendments. And now, according to the Virginia Mercury, the Virginia Democrats released their budget plans, and we're going to take a look at what's in and what's out. But before we do that, I'd like to also recognize Speaker Don Scott and his initial Black and White Gala. What a phenomenal event honoring crossover and Black history during this time of the month that was held in Richmond. It was a phenomenal event where everyone, including the governor, lieutenant governor, Governor Wilder, Congressman Bobby Scott, and a plethora of who's who, all attended. And it was a great opportunity to let our hair down and just come together with smiles and joy and enjoy each other's company and go back on the hill the next day and work things out for the people. It's those type of events that really build camaraderie, and those type of events really help to tear down walls, because at the end of the day, policy making is all about the people. So if you don't have the people in mind, then your policy really doesn't mean that much. It becomes very selfish and self-serving. So hats off to you, Speaker Scott, for your inaugural Black and White Gala. We had a great time, and we hope for much success in the future as well. So let's take a look at what's in the budget and what's out. We're going to focus on the Virginia Mercury article here. So it tells us that this is an article printed, actually published on February 19th, where it talks about Youngkin's tax cuts were stripped out as legislators put their own spending proposals. Now, of course, according to the Virginia Mercury, Governor Youngkin's year-long push for tax cuts is running up against a stiff opposition in the General Assembly. As a matter of fact, his marquee proposal to bring a professional sports arena to Northern Virginia has also gotten a mixed reception, and Democrats are still eager to show that they're doing more to boost funding for state's K-12 schools. Yeah, which, again, is really big. All of these are major issues. You know, we only have so much money. We only have so much in the pot, and we got to spread it around where it's most effective, right? So who gets the most priorities here? So according to Virginia Mercury, there are not many big items the Republican governor and the Democratic legislature are going to agree on this year, which, you know, also has us kind of worried we're headed for a special session. I don't think so. That's me. I think we're going to work it out, but it's possible. But they have to reach a new deal. And keep in mind, it's a two-year budget. And the process of working out those details hit a new phase on Sunday as Democrats leaders release their budgets to their counterpart to Governor Youngkin's budget. So this is what I call Budget Sunday once again. So now, when we take a look at what's in and what's out, Virginia Mercury, they have taken a look at several items. And I think these are very impactful because these are the areas where there's going to be most contention, right? You know, we talked about cannabis last week and how that may hit us, definitely hit a snag when it gets to the governor's desk. So we'll see where that happens. But let's take a look at first the split on the arena and metro funding. Now, according to the Virginia Mercury, the House budget includes language necessary to advance the pending economic development deal that would create a new sports arena in Alexandria. Now, this would be home to two major sports teams. One, the Washington Wizards, and two, the Washington Capitals. Capitals, that's the hockey team. So NBA and a hockey team, NHL. With that, we also find where the language would create Virginia Sports and Entertainment Authority. And it's a new public body that would help finance and oversee the arena. Now, the Senate, which didn't pass legislation that would pave the way for the deal, didn't put the arena in the budget. Now, of course, we've probably seen or heard on the radio or television or in social media where the president pro tem of the Senate is at odds with the governor over this arena. As a matter of fact, the reason why it wasn't in the Senate budget, because it reflects the anti-arena stance taken by Senator Louise Lucas, Democrat out of Portsmouth, NSU alum, who chairs the Senate Finance and Appropriations Committee. As a matter of fact, she's quoted as saying, "We're not going to let billionaires build their fortunes on the backs of our taxpayers' dollars." So with that, we know that Senator Lucas really wants relief given to individuals going through the toll back and forth to Portsmouth. So they're looking for about $100 million in toll relief, right? Now, for those of you that travel back and forth through tolls and back and forth through the Bridgetown Bridge, you know, that relief is welcome. You know, again, you know, tolls going up, gas is going up, you know, everything's going up. So the relief is definitely welcome. But will this come in the way of getting the new sports arena in Northern Virginia? Well, let's take a look at it. So the arena itself, according to Virginia Mercury, envisions the authority issuing $2 billion in bonds to fund the project. Now, those bonds are repaid for future revenues generated by the arena and also the nearby development. Now, the nearby development is one of an entire like sports complex and all-encompassing sports experience. One thing that the owner of the Washington Wizards and Capitals talked about is the fact that the city of D.C., it really lacks the space to have that all-encompassing area for them. So, you know, when you have that or that lack of that space, it really, really hurts your ability to attract a lot of different things, right? So with that, he says that, you know, there's no upfront state investment in a deal, which means its inclusion in the budget doesn't require lawmakers to majorly reallocate funds or raise taxes to pay for it. But again, it's supposed to be paid by future revenues. So we're banking on this thing making money to pay it. But we're going to issue the bonds for it, $2 billion. So let's just say they don't make the money for it. Then who's on the hook for the bonds? And I think that's what a lot of individuals, especially on the Democratic side, are looking at, saying, you know, and those who are opponents of the arena, saying that this may be a risk for us where we can fund a lot of other things that could reap a lot more benefits, right? So we'll get to healthcare, education in just a moment, but a lot of individuals that are opponents of it say, no, this is a land grab. This is too much for our area. It's not needed. But there are others that are proponents of the arena says this is exactly what's needed in order to put Virginia on the map as a sports destination for the country. Right here, Northern Virginia, suburbs of D.C., along with Virginia Beach. You know, of course, you know, there's been talk of getting a team down here forever. You know, but again, you know, that's that's what individuals who are proponents say, this is what we need. So we'll see what happens. But several Democratic senators, according to Virginia Mercury from Northern Virginia, have indicated that they're still open to an arena deal, but whether it makes it to the final budget will depend on whether they can come to an agreement with, you got it, Governor Youngkin. Once again, it's all about negotiation. That's what it boils down to when we talk about policymaking. Now, in a transportation funding debate tied to the arena, this is what we were talking about before. All right, so this is where the politics comes in. According to the Virginia Mercury, the House proposed $249.5 million over the next 2 years for the Washington area, Washington Metro Area Transit Authority, which operates the metro system to address its budgetary shortfalls. Now, with this, Youngkin did not propose any additional funding above what Virginia pays for the authority, but would allow Virginia to give more if Metro provides a corrective action. So the Senate didn't propose any additional funding for that, but still, you have upper chamber leaders recommending the governor's administration continue to discuss financing Metro and commuter changes post-pandemic. So once again, this is up in the air. But once again, when we talk about transportation, we talk about the tolls here in Southampton Roads with Portsmouth. And also we talk about the Metro in Northern Virginia to help manage that particular transit issue. So we'll see what happens. So we're talking $2 billion, $100 million, and $249.5 million. It's a lot of money. And you might as well say a quarter of $1 billion when you say $249.5, $250 million. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of taxpayer money for the benefit of who? Who is it going to benefit? Is it going to benefit all of us, or will it benefit a few? And I think that's where Senator Lucas' statement comes in, where she says she's not going to allow billionaires to build arenas on the backs of taxpayers. So that's, we'll see what happens, but that's where the arena itself stands. So let's take a look at tax cuts now. Now, what's in and what's out? Tax cuts, Democratic budget is out. And taxing digital goods and services, guess what? It's in. So although Youngkin told the General Assembly in January, according to the Virginia Mercury, that his wide-ranging tax reform plan was a, quote-unquote, a package deal, and he was, quote, was only interested in a plan that reduces taxes for Virginians, unquote, both the House and the Senate ignored those desires. So in other words, neither chamber in their budget proposal included across the board 12% income tax cut that the governor sought, or a bump in the state sales tax meant to partially offset it. So of course, you know, the governor, and I was there when he released his budget, you know, he was, again, selling this as an opportunity, you know, for the Commonwealth across the board, you know, more tax cuts, but raise, you know, the taxes on these goods and services to help offset the cost. Neither the House nor the Senate put it in the budget. Totally ignored. As a matter of fact, on Budget Sunday, Senator Lucas called the cuts, quote unquote, not sustainable, citing a state's commission. July finding that Virginia is underfunding its local school districts. All right. So this is where the JLARC study comes in. So we're going to get to that in just a moment. That's the next thing we're going to talk about when we talk about spending on education, because the JLARC report really exposed the inadequacy of the formula that the Commonwealth of Virginia uses to fund its K-12 schools. As a matter of fact, it was just so blatantly outrageous how we are so underfunded that immediately the legislature knew that they had to act on it. Look, if we want the best and the brightest, if we want to continue to educate Virginians to compete on the world stage and also invite those that are to come here to do great things, we got to spend on K-12 education properly. Once again, the operative word is properly. But before we get there, just to kind of close out this tax cut piece, the House and Senate, they're embracing Youngkin's push to close what he called the big tech loophole. So This is where the digital service tax comes in, according to the Virginia Mercury. They look to close a big tech loophole by extending the sales and use tax to digital goods like software packages, digital downloads, and guess what? Streaming services. So what's going to happen? Now, all those things that we download and stream, get ready for a tax on it. That's right. Tax is coming. You know, it's interesting. I remember some years ago where online buying and selling really took off. And I said, I remember one time I looked and I saw my total. And it was crazy because it didn't charge any tax, state tax or anything like that. I said, wow. I said, somebody's going to find this out. And tax is going to be included on all this. So, yes, Amazon, you order something from them, it's going to include the tax for your state and all that other good stuff. So digital downloads, yeah, the tax is coming. As a matter of fact, according to the House Appropriations Chairman Luke Torian, Democrat out of Prince William, said, on this, the governor was correct. You see, legislators have no problem saying when other legislators are right or lawmakers. Luke Torian, a Democrat, said, the governor is right. As a matter of fact, he said it makes no sense to pay sales tax when you buy a Blu-ray disc, but don't pay a tax when you download the same movie from a digital retailer. Now, of course, the House GOP is characterizing the rejection of Youngkin's proposed income tax cuts, according to the Virginia Mercury, as a, quote, a $1.3 billion tax hike, unquote. Well, first of all, how are you giving a tax hike if you're not including a tax cut? In other words, you're just simply paying the same thing. So you're not hiking anything. You're just leaving it as is. Again, wordplay is very important, especially when you deal with policy and things of that nature. But it says that the governor signaled he wasn't giving up on the idea. And according to the Virginia Mercury, in a Sunday evening statement after the budget Sunday, he said he would be reviewing the plans through the lens that Virginians can't afford another tax increase and, in fact, need additional tax relief. But once again, you know, both houses ignored it across the board. No tax cuts is unsustainable. A commission report supported their assertion to this. So, Governor, we hear you, but at the same time, you got to find some evidence. Where's the report? Where's the commission? Where's the evidence that shows that Virginians need another tax cut and it is sustainable? Or can we continue to maintain what we have now and be a good manager of it like our system is? I'll say that. Our system is a phenomenal system when it comes to managing our budget. Hats off to the Secretary of Finance and everyone in state government because what they're doing is phenomenal, hands down. So hats off to them. You know, but at the same time, once again, a tax cut sounds good, but the question becomes, how do you pay for it? That's the question. That's the question. The question now, what is the answer? All right, let's take a look at now big spending on education. But before you do that, I want to remind you that it's Stay in the Water. I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille, and you're listening to our 2024 Virginia General Assembly Week in Review. The budget is in and what's out. And how would this make a difference here in the Commonwealth of Virginia? Now we're going to take a look at big spending on education. The Virginia Mercury did a phenomenal job outlining several areas that I believe are very important when we take a look at the budget and those areas where I think we're going to have some major issues or conflicts in order to get compromise on it. Now, according to the Virginia Mercury, Democrats' House and Senate proposals greatly increase education spending above the levels envisioned by Youngkin, which they say is needed to fill gaps in state funding to local division. Now, as a matter of fact, this is a quote from Senator Mamie Locke, Democrat out of Hampton, where she makes a statement referring to the Joint Legislative Audit and Review Commission. She says, quote, the recent JLARC review of our funding formula demonstrated the need to modernize and update how we fund public education. Matter of fact, she also said, it also has become apparent that we must do more to address teacher salaries to ensure we have a high quality system of education for our students. And with that, you know, we find where both chambers are proposing incremental salary increases for teachers. Of course, I believe our teachers should be paid more. They have one of the most important jobs in our society, if not the most important, and that's educating our future. future leaders. Our teachers need as much support as they can get, as much pay as they can get. Because at the end of the day, they spend more quality time with them, our children do, than a lot of times at home. And it's only because of the nature of how we work, how we travel, and so forth. So let's give them the support. So I'm so glad to see that both chambers are proposing these incremental salary increases for teachers. Where are they at? 3% in the Senate, 3.375 in the House. Listen, I'll take 3.375. Let's go with it. But to bring Virginia's average teacher salary up to the national average, according to Virginia Mercury, we need this increase. As a matter of fact, a House presentation on last Sunday specified the national average will be based on figures from the National Education Association, which is the primary teachers union in the U.S., and school divisions, which provide at least a 2% increase access to state funding. Now, of course, Governor Youngkin's plan does include the 2% salary increase for teachers, but the House and the Senate goes further, an extra 1 or 1.375%. In addition to that, other major spending, according to the Virginia Mercury, priorities include hundreds of millions of extra for states at risk, add on a bucket of money used to supplement funding for school divisions with high number of economically disadvantaged students, and the House puts an additional $384 million toward that priority over the next 2 years, while the Senate, they put $200 million. So when we talk about our students, when we talk about ensuring that we are educating the most important part of our society, you know, the House and the Senate are doing it the right way. You know, they say, listen, we believe that our children are the future. We believe that we're being underfunded. We believe that it's time for us to fund education properly. So therefore, we're going to put our money where our mouth is. And that's the key. Put your money where your mouth is. And that's what the Democrats are doing. That's what they're showing. So with that, you know, once again, this is based upon the JLARC Commission, the JLARC study, not just they're pushing something out because they just thought about it. But again, we need to give our teachers as much support as possible to help our students. So when we talk about helping our students, it's just not K through 12, right? But it's even before that. Let's take a look at early childhood care funding. According to the Virginia Mercury, there was an agreement on that. Now, we know that, well, it's been said many times, and we've seen studies that a child that starts early childhood learning by age 3 has a better opportunity to advance in society and through school more successfully than a kid that starts at 5, just at kindergarten, or even a child that starts at 4, right? I mean, hopefully, you know, we can get more kids in at age 3 and also more daycare funding for families as well, because I don't know about you, but childcare costs are astronomical right now. They've gone up tremendously. You know, I've talked about this before. My father and my mother, who both passed away, going on to be with the Lord, you know, they had a heart for children. So we started a daycare center and ended up becoming a child learning center for 21 years back home. And they saw the escalation of costs to raise children, to care for children. And out of their hearts, they, you know, accepted for a lot of times what a lot of single mothers or what families struggling could pay to keep their kids while they would go to work. You know, that doesn't exist right now. You know, if you're taking, there are a lot of places, and this was a legit business. But, you know, if a person, maybe children being kept at home or by a neighbor or relative. But when we talk about child care and early childhood learning, that's a different scenario. We want to make sure our kids are learning. So Youngkin made early childhood care a centerpiece of his budget proposal. Now, I do remember this. There was a huge presentation about this, and he has a real heart for it. But according to Virginia Mercury, Governor Youngkin called for $412 million over the next 2 years. So that's $206 million per year for state's child care subsidy program to maintain current levels of care, even as a federal pandemic relief fund disappear. Now, I think that's significant. Because we forget about how the CARES Act, one of the greatest pieces of legislation, CARES Act 1 and 2 that came out of Congress, that really helped us. I mean, it saved a lot of businesses, a lot of families, everyone. It was huge. So it was a phenomenal thing. And because that money is disappearing across the board, all states, you know, Governor Youngkin said, hey, we need to add to that. So with that, both houses, House and Senate, according to Virginia Mercury, embraced that proposal. That's right. With Senator Locke saying Sunday, the Senate, quote, affirms the funding provided and introduced in the budget to support early childhood care and education and recommend maintaining the current service level in the second year, unquote. Once again, when you put the people first, when you have good intentions, and when everyone sees that and can agree, from the executive office to the House of Delegates to the Senate, they embrace that. Agreement on it, we know that's going to pass. We know that funding is going to go to child care centers and for mothers and families to provide that funding for the so that they can have child care, early child care, childhood funding. Absolutely wonderful. That's when public policy works, especially when it works for the children. I love it when a great plan comes together. And finally, this is something that we see impacting us now. We thought it was long term, but this is something that we see that's causing havoc all around us every day. And that is the regional greenhouse gas initiative that we have here in Virginia that we see there's a fresh push for it. Climate change. According to the Virginia Mercury, Democrats and Republicans, they've been squabbling on whether Virginia should be a part of the multi-state carbon market known as the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or RGGI, for years. Now, Governor Youngkin, no surprise here, he vowed to withdraw Virginia even before he took office, and did so through regulation at the end of last year, although environmental groups are fighting the move in the court. Now, according to the Virginia Mercury, this year's House budget would direct the state to rejoin the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or once again, RGGI, and projects $100 million in revenues from participation over the biennial. While Senator Lucas said that the Senate budget doesn't include the language, the chamber spent much of the past 2 years defending Virginia's participation as a brick wall issue. So there you have it. You know, these are the highlights that of what's in and what's out and where we're going to have the most, I believe, the most battle over these particular issues. Now, we're not talking a little amount of money. We're talking billions of dollars just right there, whether it's long term or upfront. But one thing about it, we know our General Assembly, they want to hear from you. So be involved in the process. Contact your local delegate or state senator, or come or log on to the Virginia General Assembly and view a committee meeting. Make sure your voice is heard, because it's your government, it's your democracy. And I'm your host, Dr. Eric LaVille, and this is Stay the Water. And we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Be good, be great. God bless.
Hi, I'm Kerry Washington, and you're listening to State of the Water with award-winning host, Dr. Eric LaVille.